Hey, it's Eric, and episode 255 of Way of the Warrior is brought to you by our dear friends, Celebration Cinema. They have been a long sponsor of us and proudly bring you UFC 182, Cormier and John Jones. The grudge match you've been waiting for, you can see it on the big screen January 3rd. Tickets available, celebrationcinema.com. Go support them because they have supported us. And now we give you episode 255. Have a great weekend.
Yeah. Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 yep, seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
And it's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by
Nogueira. I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric, along with Joe. Sean is, I think he's done his three shows that he's going to do this year, and he is gone for the year. We will be handling it without him. But there's plenty to talk about today, as we had two huge, huge cards over the weekend. We had a new champion. We got to witness a whole bunch of questions that I don't know that we might be ready to dig into, things like what is wrong with the judging still in the world of mixed martial arts?
Yeah.
And perhaps is Junior Dos Santos being the number one contender, so to speak? Is that really a good thing for his overall health? And we'll talk about that here in a second. Plus, the UFC has a giant lawsuit on their hands, or maybe not. I think – I forget who it was on our Facebook page, but put it best that now is the time when every MMA fan in America gets to pretend that they're a desktop lawyer. Right. So we will do our best to be desktop lawyers, or at least maintain some semblance of fairness. Rashad gets a new fight. Rory gets some bad news. We know when CM Punk is going to start, and we get the final fight of the year in Brazil. A lot of, in my opinion, and you can weigh in when it's necessary, Joe, but in my opinion, some pretty one-sided affairs on that card. So we'll wait and see what happens this weekend when we go to Fox Sports 1. But we start, I think it's appropriate to start with the brand new Women's Strawweight Championship. Carla Esparza put on a brilliant performance against Rose. Rose certainly was doing what Rose does, you know, with her explosive striking in that first round. Not a lot of damage, but certainly a lot of contact. And you got to see, if you were somebody who had no idea who it was, you had heard Pat Barry talk about her, but you just had never seen her fight. You got a pretty good view of what she was in that first 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Afterwards, you got to see why Carla Esparza was the number one seed in the show and is now the strawweight champion.
Agreed. So Carla Esparza was clearly the number one seed because she was the Invicta champion.
Yes.
Rose was relatively unknown going into this. You know, she was known a lot for being Pat Barry's girlfriend and now fiance. They got engaged just before she went on the show. And on the show, she tore through everybody. I actually picked her to win this fight because she was just an amazing striker. And then if you go on the ground with her, she's just going for submissions one after the next. It wasn't like defensive jiu-jitsu. It's very offensive-oriented.
And to jump off of that, right, she does stuff that's very Conor McGregor, right? Like her striking, you really don't know. She did a lot of, you know, if Sean were here, he could walk you through the 1-2-8-7 combinations, because once you get to feet, I kind of lose the number of combinations. But the left-right kick to the head, left right kick to the other side of the body, like those sorts of things you don't see coming because you're not used to somebody who's going to use every extremity. That's what makes her such a standout in that division.
Yeah, and similar to Conor McGregor, she's got that traditional martial arts style where she stands, you know, bladed to her opponent, you know, very sideways, instead of like a Muay Thai fighter who would be more square to their because she has a background in traditional martial arts, I believe is why she has that. And she was actually very successful in, like, point sparring as an adolescent.
Of course she would be, right? Cause, I mean, well, because when you watch her fight, that's what she's scoring a lot of points, but not
absolutely
doing a lot of damage.
Very long limbs, lots of kicks. So Carla Esparza, we've got to give it to her. The fight that she won to get into the finale, she actually was on her feet primarily the whole time because she was really just known as this very strong wrestling background. So I gave her a lot of credit going into this. Okay, Carla can stand and bang with people, and she has a chance now. But in this fight, it was complete domination. And I think Rose said it best. She said she felt like a kid in there.
And she looked like it, right? Yeah. Those first 3 minutes, I thought, okay, this is what we wanted, right? These two are going to go at it, and Carla's got all these weapons we haven't seen yet because yeah. Rose has been kind of feeling it out and really point sparring, if not to be disrespectful, but she's getting the
sure.
better end
in
of
and out.
In
yeah.
and out, and right?
Yep.
And then after that, it was literally a drubbing.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people dislike Carla because she was, you know, a bully on this show, and she can be very arrogant and degrading to the other women. But you have to respect her skills. She went in there and did very, very well. I don't think she's going to be Ronda Rousey. She's not going to stand on top of this division for, you know, and just smoke everybody. There's some big up-and-comers that are, you know, waiting in the wings to challenge her.
There are, but I'm not jumping on the Carla Esparza bandwagon, but what's really interesting coming out of that fight and coming out of that night is, you know, to jump off and take a step back a minute to talk about the Reebok deal, right?
Yeah.
So we talked that the deal is champion gets X amount of money, 1 through 5 get X amount of money, 5 through 10, you know, 6 through 10, and then 11 through 15, right?
Right.
But we didn't really learn a lot over Friday and Saturday night, in my opinion, because Felice Herrig, who didn't really do that great towards the end of the show, looked fantastic. So what does that tell us about her? I don't really know. You know, you think
her opponent Lisa Ellis was just, she didn't deserve to be in there. She shouldn't have been in.
So this is what I'm saying, right? You have a whole division now where I don't know that I can tell you that Carla Esparza won't do this, because I don't really know. I've gotten to see.
Sure.
The
rankings just came out, right?
Well, they just came out. But more importantly, we've talked a lot on this show of how, much like when you come over from Strikeforce to the UFC, you might get shellacked.
Yeah.
When you come out of the Tough House, 80% of you are going to get washed out, because that's just what happens. You go to a different level of competition, a different pay grade, and a different thing that you're doing, a higher level.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Dana White made a comment this week that I think is apt here, you know, saying that Ben Askren wants nothing to do with the UFC because he's guessing that if Ben comes over, that same sort of thing will happen. I'm not agreeing with that, but this is the scenario, right? When you come out of the Tough House and you go into the Octagon and you're victorious in your first fight, that's awesome, because a lot of tough fighters win their first fight. Obviously, half of them do. But then after that, you don't hear from any of them. And so what's interesting about this is that we started a whole new division.
Yep.
Everybody who was in the Tough House is currently ranked, probably inaccurately so, because
there's some vetting that needs
to happen. I can tell you personally, you know, 11 to 15, I made up, because I don't really, if you lost and you lost one bout in the UFC,
right.
How do I weight you? On the level of the loss, how you lost, what? So I think we need to wait and see before we just say she isn't, because she looked so much better. She was ranked number one. She did her job in the house, but then looked like a completely different person when
Agreed.
She got in the Octagon on Friday night.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. So, like, number 11, Paige VanZant, you know her, right? She's an up-and-coming.
This is not I don't know these people. I know them, but I don't know how to rank a lot of them.
Agreed. Yeah, yeah. I completely agree. We have to figure out this division. You know, a lot of these people came from Invicta, so we're carrying over some of that.
Sure.
And then, so we've got two views into this. One is Invicta, and then the second is the Ultimate Fighter House. To base our rankings on. But if you look at everything else, these rankings have been around for years, and we've got to, you know, had gatekeepers and the test of time for different people, 1 through 15.
Yeah, and I guess I would argue slightly. I understand your point with Invicta, but I can give you, and we won't here because I don't want to spend an hour talking about women's MMA, but
why not?
Because we have a lot of other crazy stuff
gotcha.
To talk about,
yeah, yeah.
right? But there are a lot of people that have come over from Invicta and got annihilated,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
That won every fight they ever had in Invicta and then did not do so well in the UFC. So I don't even think that's you can go to Fight Pass, and I highly recommend going to Fight Pass and watching some of that stuff. But even then, you don't get a feel for the difference between what happens when you show up at a live event and what that does to your psyche. You either raise up to that level or you don't. I mean,
yeah, we're agreeing on this.
Lots of people liked Tisha Torres, and she was great. But she, again, another fighter who looked amazing on Friday night.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I have to agree with you. So Tisha was my favorite going into the Ultimate Fighter, and she's just so one-dimensional. She's got this kind of, like, she charges and flurries, you know, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. But that's all she has, over and over and over again. And to your point in Invicta, that was very successful
sure.
for her. I think she came in undefeated. She might still be undefeated. But that's all she's got.
Well, yeah, because
we have to see more than this, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you don't count the exhibition
and we don't,
loss,
unfortunately,
and
we don't.
Ultimate
we don't call
right,
it count. Right. I still think you're on TV, so it's not like,
yeah,
it didn't happen in somebody. But whatever. other couple of things that happened on Friday night. You got to see Charles Oliveira get back on the winning streak. A terrible, terrible fight between KJ Nunes and Darren Cruikshank that ended up being a no contest because of a horrible, horrible eye poke.
Jeez. He actually had to have surgery for that. He tore his eye duct.
Oh, it was awful.
Yeah, I know.
And so
I'm glad he stopped, though, right?
I'm glad he didn't try and
be Mr. Tough Guy.
Totally glad he stopped, but I would say it's fascinating when you look at that event and then go back a week to look at the Faber event, right? Where that one was terrible but didn't require surgery, right? Essentially did the Three Stooges, and that one was less impactful than whatever happened here with KJ Nunes,
yeah,
right?
And he got it twice too, right? So he got poked in the eye twice,
yeah,
back to back. I was happy, you know. It's really hard to see anybody say, "Hey, no, I can't go on." But I was happy that he did that.
Well, and I think he should. It wasn't his fault. I don't look at him and go, "Oh, well, I should." If you were ranked and he's not, you know, I wouldn't have moved him down because it wasn't his fault, right?
Yeah.
But you can't talk about Friday night without talking about a guy that I think a lot of people have seen fly under the radar and haven't really seen an explosive, insane performance like this from Yancy Medeiros, who looked
tough as nails.
I thought a great fight. I really enjoyed Friday night. I knew, and we talked about this last week, right? I knew that Saturday was going to be awesome. Right, we knew that going in because you see a bunch of heavyweights,
yeah, it was a huge card.
You see Rafael dos Anjos, and you know what you're going to get. Right,
mm-hmm.
There were a lot of question marks on Friday night, and I was pleasantly surprised. All of the women delivered as I figured they would, but there was a lot of guys on here who had a chance to kind of
stand out a bit.
Yeah, and I think Yancy was of the guys that fought. Yancy was the dude that stood out with Oliveira closely behind because I think a lot of people, myself included, wanted to see him get back on the winning streak and start 15 with some momentum. But
agreed. Watching Yancy fight, I was probably thinking the same thing you were. He deserved to be in there, and mm-hmm. he was proving, hey, guys, I deserve to be in the UFC, and I'm going to be here for a while. And by the way, you can't knock me out.
Nope, you can't knock me out.
The only way I'm leaving this octagon is if I'm dead or unconscious.
And then Saturday night, we move into Fox 13, the 13th card on the Fox Network, which, like I said, delivered from the entertainment value.
Yeah,
and then gave you a whole bunch of stuff to think about. And we start with Matt Mitrione over Gabe Gonzaga. You know, Matt Mitrione is one of these guys, and I would start with Stipe and Dos Santos. I'll get to them in just a second, but this for me was nearly as an interesting story in that Mitrione is one of those guys that's just been quietly sitting out there in the deep water of the heavyweight division, you know, racking up some really, in my opinion, some really impressive wins.
Matt, the meathead Mitrione.
Yeah, but I mean, who would have thought?
It's painful to listen to this guy talk.
It is painful to listen to him talk and, you know, and defend Thiago Silva and all the insane stuff that he does, right? But I, much like the Carla Esparza, I don't really care what you're like outside of the octagon.
Yeah.
This is a sport. If you were somebody who loves the NFL, I would venture to guess 80% of the people on the team that you love are holistically a-holes, right? They're just terrible human beings. But
agreed. You
watch them as a team, and I watch this sport for what happens in the octagon. I mean, this is not me wiping away if you do terrible things outside of the octagon. But if you're just a jerk, I don't really care. If you want to say dumb stuff, I don't really care about that. But what I'm saying is, in the heavyweight division, we now have the same problem that we essentially do in both the welterweight, which we'll get to in a second, and the lightweight division, where you've got this logjam of people who are kind of raising their hand and, you know, getting up in a level and getting some wins and putting some notches in their belt that makes it so that you need to pay attention to them. And Mitrione, not that I'm not saying he deserves a title fight, right?
But he's ranked 12th right now, and I think that's appropriate.
It's appropriate, but I think he needs a bigger test, and I think he's ready for it. You had Alistair Overeem really kind of walk through Stefan Struve, and I don't know that we learned a lot about Alistair Overeem.
No.
And I was glad to see Stefan get through a fight, and I don't know what this means. This is what I'm saying about Saturday night. I don't know what that means because given the length of the layoff, given why the layoff, I have a lot of exceptions why I won't just be like, just stop fighting. Just give it up and walk away. Because I don't actually know. You had one fight against a really dangerous opponent. Not that Mitrione would have been any easier, because I don't think he would have. But I don't know that I learned that Stefan Struve is not a contender anymore in the heavyweight division, just as much as I didn't learn that Alistair Overeem has reinvigorated his career.
Yeah, so I think it was a mental issue with Stefan. Stefan is only 26 years old. He's been in the UFC since 2009. And if you remember watching that fight, he didn't engage at all. Mm-hmm. I was literally sitting on my couch yelling at the TV, throw something, engage, just to kind of get that ring rust out, right?
Sure.
Like, once you get aggressive, maybe you can move on from that. But he didn't do that, and he paid for it. I mean, Alistair Overeem, you know, took him down and beat him up.
And that was
to your point, too, we didn't learn anything about Alistair. The big question was, okay, now he's moved camp. He's with Jackson Winklejohn, you know, arguably one of the best, if not the best camp in the game. Is this going to take him from that kind of plateau that he hit onto the next level? And we didn't really learn. He fought a guy who was not mentally prepared to be in the ring, did not engage with him, and he won.
Now, let me say this, though, because I want to be very clear. I'm a fan of Overeem. I want to see
Really?
I have loved Overeem.
And this is back to your earlier point, because you don't care about people outside the ring.
I don't.
Walking to the ring, he's just an arrogant jerk.
But prior to this UFC stint where he's been kind of touch and go, and I understand that he was on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Call it horse meat. Call it whatever you want to. But I enjoyed his K-1 and Pride career, and I enjoyed what he did in Strikeforce, and I'm just a fan of the way that he had been dispatching people with his just girth and his kickboxing skill.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I love to see him go up the ranks. This, however, doesn't answer the question, can you do what happened in the main event? Because I don't think you can.
I don't think so either.
I think Stipe Miocic or Junior Dos Santos, if they took you for five rounds, would drown you.
Yeah, Alistair always guesses. He can't make five. No way.
The co-main event was another interesting bout, I would say, in that Nate Diaz and Rafael Dos Anjos. And Rafael Dos Anjos literally just beat Nate Diaz up for the entire fight. Nate would come out afterwards and say that he wasn't in shape. That's why he missed weight. He needed the money, so he took the fight, and then quickly took to Instagram. And there was a couple people on our Facebook page that wanted to take exception to us calling this out, but took to Instagram and started smoking weed immediately after the fight.
Right.
Here is my problem with this. And let me be, again, as I was on Facebook, let me be clear here. I don't care if you want to smoke weed. I really don't. I'm all for legalizing it. I think it's silly that you can smoke cigarettes, but you can't smoke all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
However, you are employed by the UFC in a state, Arizona at the time, where that is not legal.
Right.
So to roll up essentially to roll up his entire week of stupidity of not making weight, getting annihilated, and then doing this, you just should be smarter. It's okay to be the bad guy, but there's nothing worse on earth than a dumb bad guy.
Listen, nobody ever accused Nate Diaz of being an intelligent young man.
But it's so interesting.
He complains about not making money, and then he skips media events and gets penalized for it. He doesn't make weight and gets penalized for it. He posts things that could get him penalized and banned from athletic commissions.
And I don't know the nuance of that, because of course they would have to prove when he did it. Was he actually doing
the
it?
The point is he's acting recklessly.
Well, and
I think we see this a lot, right? From gym owners to professional athletes. He's a great, great fighter. His business acumen is hugely lacking.
Sure.
He needs good management surrounding him, saying, hey, man, you have to make it to this. You go to this one-hour appointment, this press event, and you won't be charged $10,000.
Right.
So just do it. I will pick you up and drive you there.
Well, and so what's fascinating is you get to see this guy who's tremendous in the ring most times, unless it's Rory McDonald throwing him on his head or Junior Dos Santos cutting him in half with leg kicks. Usually he comes out and he performs, right?
Rafael
Dos Anjos, sorry. Usually he performs. In this case, he doesn't. What's fascinating to me is on top of all of that, you get to see this interesting dichotomy between him and his brother, essentially doing the same thing except for Nick has more business acumen. So he does it in a way that people are like, oh, that's Nick just being Nick. Where the replication of it, so Nate doing it, now it becomes this annoying younger brother doing this thing that we as an organization don't want to deal with.
So is Nick brilliant in his antics that make him popular, or is he so dumb that it brings on that attention?
I don't think Nick is dumb at all. I think when you get Nick to go back to the Jordan St. Pierre fight, right? When you get Nick to go to these press conferences, he is nothing but brilliant in coming up with things that he knows people are going to glom onto, like wolf tickets. You know, and
but is that? Do you think he really does that for clickbait, or do you think he's just?
No, I absolutely do, because I would, if you could rewind the clock, which we can't, to 3 weeks before that press conference even happens, and we were to poll every MMA fan and every MMA journalist and luminary as to what a wolf ticket is,
I remember Googling it. Yeah, right. And now we still use it. It's part of our vernacular.
Now
it's
become part of this historic, archive of MMA. And so it's interesting to see the difference between those two, in that one clearly knows what he's doing. He's the anti-hero because he's the anti-hero.
Right.
And Nate, it feels like he's doing it because he saw his older brother do it and thinks it's cool. And the other side of the fence is that Rafael Dos Anjos earns himself a title shot because Nurmagomedov is still hurt, which I love that idea because it allows me the dream scenario, which I'm not saying we're getting here, but it allows me this dream scenario where I would get to see a rematch between Rafael Dos Anjos and Nurmagomedov. Nurmagomedov obviously has a victory over Rafael. That's why the internet is exploding over this title shot.
Right.
Can't believe he didn't
even
have
to. He's injured. He can't fight,
guys. He can't show up, guys. And Pettis, we want him in the ring more.
The thing about Khabib, though, is he acts like he's not injured. He showed up at the press conference asking for the fight. When he can't fight, what are you doing?
Well, he's doing the Conor McGregor, right?
Agreed.
Talking yourself back into it.
He is staying part of the conversation.
Because the thing with both of these guys is Nurmagomedov obviously speaks English, so it makes it a little bit easier. But he's got a name that on paper most people can't pronounce.
No,
unless you spend a lot of time looking at it and going Khabib Nurmagomedov. Okay,
and he gets mixed up with like Junior Dos Santos.
There's three other Russians in his division that he gets confused with, and Rafael Dos Anjos doesn't really speak English, so it makes it difficult for those two guys. And I think Nurmagomedov knows that, so he shows up at pressers and keeps putting his name out and name out and saying, "I'm undefeated in this division. Give me the shot, give me the shot, give me the shot." So that when we're talking about Rafael Dos Anjos getting Pettis, we're still talking about Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, and he deserves a shot. He just has to be healthy, and he'll get it. Pettis said he wants to fight three times this year, so he'll get the Dos Anjos fight, and then the winner of that will take on Khabib. So I think we have to give credit to Rafael Dos Anjos. That first leg kick in the first round against Diaz, smack. I mean, everybody in the country heard and felt that kick.
Yes.
And I think Joe Rogan might have said, "Whoa, that's not going to be good." He continued to chop down his leg and completely annihilated Diaz's leg. After the fight, he said, "We were watching tape and saw he never checks those kicks." So this was a game plan perfectly executed to chop down the tree, being Diaz. You got to give him so much credit for that. Not only is he a brilliant fighter, but he came in with a brilliant game plan. You know, the kryptonite to the Diaz.
And
beautiful.
And absolutely.
It makes that win that much more sweet.
Absolutely. And then, of course, the main event, which is the bulk of what we want to talk about here, which is Junior Dos Santos and Stipe Miocic. Lots of answers here and a lot of questions. If you wanted to know if Stipe belongs there, he absolutely belongs there. If you wanted to get a gut check on how terrible the reffing or the judging is in MMA, this is the fight to do it, because anybody – and in this particular case, the two buddies that gave four rounds to Junior Dos Santos, I don't know what fight they were watching.
I don't think anybody in the country does. Did it go to a split, Eric?
It was a split decision, so it was two to one.
And I think it should have been two, because there were a few rounds in there that were just negligible differences.
Yes, but I mean, if you're – and I said this on Twitter, and I believe I said it on Facebook, if – you didn't give round one and two to Stipe, you don't know how to watch this sport. So I scored it, and this is what I love about this sport and why I like the people that interact on Twitter specifically. It's kind of my favorite place to hang out. But even Facebook, we get a lot of great questions.
Yeah,
so I did it 1 and 2, Stipe, 3 and 4, Dos Santos, and 5 is where you have the nuanced argument.
Yeah. Well, where did you go 5?
Well, it depends on the day, right? Because I've watched it a couple times, and when it was live, I thought Stipe eked it out. But then I watch it again, and you see Stipe slowing down towards the end of that fight. And, to go back to some of these judges who remember Pride rules and octagon control, and then kind of mirror that with you know, cage right, aggression right. or whatever they'll put it with. Junior was the aggressor in the last 90 seconds that might have eked out that round. And so I'm not mad that Junior Dos Santos won. I am mad if you're arguing it more than round five, because essentially that, for me, was the fight, because each of them has scored two in my brain.
So I'm looking at the fight stats right now. Octagon Control, JDS had a minute and 30. Stipe had 3 minutes. Total strikes, JDS had 140 to Stipe's 102. Then significant strikes, JDS had 123 to Stipe's 89. So on paper, JDS should have won, as he did.
And he did. But here's the problem with that, right? Is that he wins and gets something that nobody wants him to get.
I know, because, especially after the whole Brendan Schaub thing
two weeks ago. And Stipe destroyed his face again. His face looked horrific.
Oh, yeah. He looked like he was in a car accident.
And he looked exactly like he did after the Cain fight, which says a lot about Stipe, right?
Yeah.
And certainly says a lot about JDS's head. And I don't know if it was Josh Gross or Mendenhall or who it was, but they were pointing out that, like, okay, the scars heal, right? But what happens to his brain that he's taking that much facial damage? You know, because Stipe was in the same fight with another human being. It doesn't look anything like that.
Exactly.
And so none of us want to see him go against Cain again.
No. I mean, for the fight factor, yes, I think everybody wants to see that. But for
Who wants to see
JDS's health reasons.
Well, okay, but even as a fan, you want to see him get beat up a fourth time?
That's what I'm saying. I don't want to see him get beat
up.
Okay. Oh, as far as earning a title shot, yes.
Okay, he's knocking
on the door.
He totally earns the shot. What I'm saying is nobody wants to actually see the fight. I mean, a fourth fight between JDS and Cain, nobody wants to see that. Because the first one taught, much like the Overeem fight, first one taught us absolutely nothing, right?
Yeah, JDS, I think an argument can be made for it, and that's the big discussion.
What
right?
is the argument? Please give it to me. What is the argument?
That I'm not making the argument, Eric. I'm saying one can be.
What did you see in fight two and fight three that you want to see this a fourth time?
I'm not saying I do. I a lot of people. That's what this whole discussion is about, right?
I know, but who
does
are these
JDS? Nobody wants to see JDS fight Cain again because they don't want to see JDS getting beat up.
Yes.
But he's knocking on the door of another title shot. Our champion right now at heavyweight is Cain Velasquez. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's right there. The point to this whole discussion is, neither of us want to see him get beat up. His face looked like Frank Mir after Brock Lesnar beat him up.
Yeah.
But this is like the third or fourth time we've seen that. And to your point, if the exterior of your face and head looks that way, just think about the brain trauma you're suffering.
Absolutely. And then, you know, and then close your eyes for a second if you're listening to this podcast. And I get that we have an interim title fight that we have to have between Verdum and Cain.
Mm-hmm.
Close your eyes for a second and imagine a fight with JDS between either one of them. Right? There is no scenario save for go back to Cain JDS 1 where he gets a punch behind the ear and that's all she wrote.
Right.
There's no scenario in my mind that works out for JDS and doesn't end up being catastrophically destructive to, again, his face and whatever is behind his head, right?
I'll give you that, but I would have argued it before this last fight, before I saw him take this much damage. I think all the damage he took from Cain has affected him in the ring now.
Sure it does.
He's, you know, he's a quarter or an eighth of a step behind where he used to be. You can't go through a car wreck like that and be the same fighter and be the same person.
Well, and, you know, they're clearly, and you've heard Joe Rogan talk about it on his podcast and obviously on the UFC and any iteration of what they air on Fox Sports 1, Reloaded and Refueled and all of the re-things that they do, is that there are people that have better chins than others. And JDS can't be knocked out, but he's different. In my brain, he's different than Robbie Lawler, Johnny Hendricks, or Matt Brown, guys that you have to hit with a truck to even slow down. And by that, I mean, Sean was talking about it last week. If you get in, you decide in January that your New Year's resolution is that you want to get in shape, and you find running boring, and you don't want to go to a gym, so you go to an MMA school, and you want to do this because you're going to get in shape quicker, whole body workout, all of the advantages to working out in a boxing or MMA gym. Then you decide that you want to spar. So they start sparring with people that are your own size, but eventually you'll get into this thing where they just do a round robin and everybody in the class gets to spar for a minute or two. You're going to go against a guy, if you're like me and you're 160, 165 pounds, you're going to go against a guy who's 260 pounds. And even if he's punching you at 50%, you hate every minute of that.
Absolutely.
So getting destroyed by another guy who's a 260-pound guy, it just isn't good for your health. And so that's what I mean is, like, he has a strong head and can't really be knocked out that easily, but he's not being punched by a guy who's 170 pounds. He's being punched by a guy who's probably 300 pounds on the night of a fight.
Yeah, I mean, so that's why the heavyweight knockout rate is so much higher than the lighter weights.
Right.
It's a clear arc from, you know, straw weight up to heavyweight.
Right.
Percentage of knockouts for heavyweights, they just hit harder. That doesn't mean their brain is stronger. It can take more trauma. But they're getting hit way harder than these straw and
flies. I mean, your skull is pretty much the same distance.
They don't have bigger brains than us.
Well, they don't have stronger skulls. I mean, they're not made of titanium, none of that stuff.
Right.
So that's kind of where we leave it with Dos Santos knocking on the door of the title shot. We have to wait for this interim fight, which will essentially be March-ish, is when Cain wants to be back.
Yeah.
So March, April, something like that. And then afterwards, we get, I'm assuming, Junior fights whoever that's going to be. And we, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about that, but to me, it depends on which Verdum shows up. But it sounds like it'll be Cain.
I think a couple shout-outs also on this card was John Moraga. Looked fantastic. Great fighter.
He did.
I think we'll see more of him.
Absolutely.
Jamie Varner.
Retiring, yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of a big story. He's been around for a while. Interestingly enough, he's saying that he's going to help start a fighters union, which will lead into our conversation later. And then Henry Cejudo, the 2008 freestyle wrestling gold medalist, made 135 pounds. He wants to fight at 125 and did really well. He didn't use very much wrestling at all, purely striking. Won a decision over Dustin Kimura. So I think we'll see more of this guy too.
Yeah, some great fights. And then we've got another one coming up this weekend that we will talk about. It is Way of the Warrior. This week brought to you by Celebration Cinema, who brings you UFC 182. Cormier and Jones on the big screen. We'll have your chance to win tickets to that and all of that on the way. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Let your heart be light. From now on,
it is Way of the Warrior, Eric, along with Joe, getting ready for Christmas week as we lead into the holidays. If you're enjoying Hanukkah this week, a happy Hanukkah to you. It is episode 255 this time around, brought to you by Celebration Cinema, who brings you UFC 182 on the big screen. Tickets available right now at CelebrationCinema.com and the Triumph Training Center. As I alluded to last segment, if you're somebody who's knocking on the door of 2015, as most of us are, and you're like, man, I'm kind of fat, and you're looking to get in shape, or you've been getting in shape and you're looking for a different type of workout, or you want to learn how to fight. They've got exclusive boxing, MMA, and jiu-jitsu all in one place. It's the only place like it that we endorse, so make sure you go check them out. Triumph Training Center, look them up on Facebook, on Twitter, and on the Googles if you would like
Googles,
to, and then make sure that you tell Sean that we sent you, and he will be extra not nice to you. So enjoy that as well. It is Way of the Warrior, episode 255. Lots of stuff going on. UFC Fight Night 58 in Brazil. UFC Fight Night 61, so just three more fight nights away. We head back to Brazil, and that will give us Glover Teixeira and Rashad Evans as a main event, which I think is very interesting because, number one, I think it's a great fight without any implications, but it has lots of implications. Where is Rashad in the 205 division? Is Glover ready for another title shot? And if he walks through Rashad Evans, I think the answer is unequivocally yes. But an exciting fight that was on again, off again this week, and we can proudly say that as of right now, without injury bug, UFC Fight Night 61 in Brazil will be Glover and Rashad.
Yeah, we haven't seen Rashad since November of 2013.
Yeah.
So this is over a year.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it is.
So a lot of questions to ask, and this will certainly answer some of them. And then the big story, our friends over at Bloody Elbow, I want to shout out to them for doing all the hard work on this.
Yeah.
Started to break, was it Friday night? I mean, I was watching so much UFC, I can't even remember. It was Friday or Saturday night it started to bubble up. They were saying, hey, we've been working on this thing. We want to tell you about it. And then as we got closer to the main event, they broke the story that there is a lawsuit out there for hundreds of millions of dollars. And so for most of Saturday night, all of Sunday, and then early Monday morning, we heard nothing. Then the UFC came out and said, we're going to do a press conference. They did a press conference on Tuesday. Leading up to that press conference, guys like Front Row Brian and then Bloody Elbow were saying that they weren't exactly sure of the logistics law-wise, if we would ever know who was in this class action lawsuit. But it turns out it's guys like Kung Lee. It's guys guys like Nate Marquardt. Yeah. John Fitch is related to that.
There's a number of other people, too, that we don't know about.
And there's a number of other people that we don't know about. But the gist of it is they're claiming monopoly practices by the UFC.
Antitrust.
Antitrust and taking it to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, to see if they can get this to go to court and see what happens. Reading through some of this and given who it is, let me say first, I don't disagree with what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. I do perhaps disagree with the way in which they're doing it. And by that, I mean it's going to be really difficult to prove monopoly in court. And because there's Bellator, there's King of the Cage, there's Cage Race, there's all of those things, specifically Bellator with Viacom money that rivals what the Fertittas have. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard, I think, to win on that note. That said,
I think their bone to pick with that specific piece of it is that they bought, you know, Strikeforce, WEC, Pride.
That is called capitalism, my friends.
Hey, I'm not a lawyer, but their lawyers believe that they have.
And their lawyers have beat Apple. They have beat Google. So their lawyers, Intel, they've got great lawyers that have done some really big things. I'm just saying, when I look at this from a neophyte, you know, somebody who doesn't know a lot about law other than what he consumes in, you know, communication law, which is what I help teach at Aquinas. But outside of that, I don't really know a lot about antitrust laws, only what I'm reading. I'm just telling you, when you think about the way the world is these days with Amazon, you could claim that's got monopolistic practices over everybody who wants to do e-commerce on the web, right? Yeah. And you would be hard-pressed to win that. I just think that bone to pick, I don't know that one they're going to win. The stuff with the video games, I think there's some weight in there, and there's certainly some weight in wanting to protect the fighters a little bit more from the way the business goes down. On the other side, though, I think as they get into court, you're going to see, and please jump in as you see fit, you know, you're going to see things like them saying that they take care of all the insurance and that Fighter Pay have done the what we call in the marketing world the inverted hockey stick. They've gone up. And so and the other side of that part of the argument is that the guys involved in this that are on the front face, Kung Lee, Nate Marquardt, John Fitch, they're all kind of guys who are sour grapes guys.
Yeah.
It's not like you've got – you don't have what I would call A-grade class people in this lawsuit that are speaking out against the UFC. Now, part of that is because guys like John Jones – and I'm not trying to connect him. I'm just using it as a – John Jones, Ronda Rousey, Cain Velasquez, right? They're being taken care of, so there's no reason to do that.
Yeah.
However – to win something like this on behalf of the fighters, not so much consumers when you're dealing with Google and Apple and Intel, I feel it's going to be a really, really difficult battle.
Yeah, Kung Lee is an actively signed fighter right now, interestingly.
He is, yes.
So, like we already said, we're not lawyers. This is at the very beginning of it. I think their claims are going to morph. I think there will be more people signing on. And at the end of the day, what this is all about is money.
Of course,
they feel like they didn't make enough money, or they were prevented from making money when they were doing business with the UFC. I don't think anybody would argue that the UFC contracts are very onerous. They, you know, some of the things they do is take their likeness in perpetuity, which is pretty absurd.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that I've been a part of contracts like that, and they're pretty. I mean, they exist a lot in the universe where they own things for perpetuity. And you have to know that stuff going in. And I think if they're taking all of the risk, they should be able to. Mm-hmm. Now, you should be paid a right if they want to use, we'll use Hoist, for example, because he's in the new UFC game. If they want to use Hoist, they should be able to use Hoist. If they want to use Randy, they should be able to use Randy, but they have to pay them a royalty.
Yeah, you need to be compensated.
In some way.
Right?
They don't have to ask you, right? They don't have to ask Randy. They don't have to ask Brock Lesnar. They don't have to ask Hoist. They don't have to ask Chemo. They don't have to ask any of those guys. But they should have to pay them something.
Absolutely.
It doesn't need to be millions of dollars, but there should be a percentage.
So that's one piece of the owner's contract that was called out. And I, you know, from a just thinking logically, that sounds like a good argument. What the law says, I don't know. What I think will happen is I don't see this going to trial. That would be the worst thing possible for the UFC. to drag this out any longer than it's already going to get dragged out.
Right.
And for them to go through the discovery phase where they will have to open their books to, you know, how much they're bringing in and the percentage of what they're bringing in that they pay to their fighters. All the things that they've been able to keep private because they're a privately held company right now would then be opened through this case. And that's the last thing in the world they want.
Do you feel, and I've read this a number of times online, so it's to get into lawyer speak for a second, this is a leading question. Do you feel that the Reebok deal was kind of the linchpin that kind of that kicked this whole thing off?
No, I think this has been going on for a while. I think the Reebok deal will become part of this lawsuit because if you think about it, so the UFC doesn't have a collective bargaining agreement. They don't, sure. Or association, I should say. So each one is each contract is negotiated independent of the other contracts. So when the UFC came up with this agreement with Reebok, there was no back and forth with fighters, at least to our knowledge. So the UFC entered into an agreement with Reebok on behalf of the fighters, with the fighters giving zero input.
And
whenever you enter a contract, nobody's like, here, sign this, Eric. Well, let's hold on. There's a little negotiation phase.
Yeah, and
that was completely skipped over.
So to rehash, if you're somebody who's just listening to this or maybe misses some of the nuance in what Joe is saying, Sean Desai, who's on the show, manages a fighter who's an active fighter in the UFC roster. So we actually do know that at least that fighter was not asked at all about this thing. And I get that they don't need to ask all of the fighters, but that fighter was not referred to. And I would bet majority that we've seen talk. I mean, if you listen to the Demetrius Johnson interview, it doesn't sound like he was asked either because he knew no answers.
Yeah, and now he's losing his Xbox deal or materially affecting his Xbox.
It's affecting. I think the X factor there, and not to make it punny, and it was not intentional. But the X factor is there. The UFC has to figure out where all that stuff goes. Because you want Microsoft and Xbox One to be a part of the organization.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Guys like you and I.
That's a win-win.
Buy an insane amount of video games,
for
right?
Sure.
So you want Zions. I mean, I know, again, mm-hmm. I use this one just because I don't know another energy drink that was totally obscure and then thrust into the spotlight. So Zions 2.0, whatever that's going to end up being. You want that because you want guys like us when we're working out or thinking about working out or don't want to drink coffee or whatever are looking for that thing endorsed by that sport that we –
and we are so brainwashed. When GSP drinks a Zions, it goes through the back of your head. Don't lie, Eric. Don't lie. It goes, maybe, I'm going to drink a Zions and then hit the gym.
It's Nas is what he sponsors. And I can honestly say that I have consumed
exactly.
a Nas or two.
It works.
So, yeah, but you've got to figure out how that fits into the equation. Because if you're going to take away, and I know this is kind of on the outer rim of this lawsuit. But, I mean, if you're going to take away the banners and you're going to take away the shorts, you don't want one sponsor for the whole organization. Reebok isn't that big.
Right.
And so, I'm being kind. Like, I know they do a lot with the NFL and they do a lot with the NBA and a lot with MLB, and they certainly are doing stuff with the UFC, but they don't have enough money to float the whole organization from a sponsorship perspective.
Yeah, hopefully they had the wisdom to negotiate that with Reebok. So Reebok will be your banner primary sponsor, but then there is going to be space for the Xboxes and the other, you know, the Zionses and Nazis of the world.
But then you get, you know, to feed into this lawsuit, right, then you get into this discussion that one of the tenets of the Reebok deal is this gear. What does this gear mean? Is it gloves? And if it's gloves, does it take out all of the other glove manufacturers?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is it bags? Does it take out all the bag manufacturers? Is it yoga mats? Is it zebra mats for your gym? Are they going to make those? And so you can't have zebra mat sponsorships when we do the prime times?
Right.
Where does this stop? Because if they're going to go do this stuff, is it just shorts and shirts? If that, okay, fine. Yeah. But if you're going to start making mouth guards and you're going to start making MMA gloves, and I know they make MMA, but you're going to start tying this into the sponsorship. What happens to the Hayabusa, which make awesome products?
Sure. So this is a perfect, you know, case in point of what this whole thing is about. It's the onerous nature of the UFC using independent contractors and then just, you know, imposing their business practices and their will on these contractors with no say. They don't have, you know, quarterly meetings with their fighters or any representatives of the fighters to come up with direction and giving them a say in this. You show up, you start at, you know, 4,000 to show and 4,000 to win, and you go from there. Hopefully you win. I don't think at the end of the day anybody is saying, man, I want to become a UFC fighter to get rich. Well, and if you are, you're a fool.
Well, because I mean, the likelihood it's just like, and we've said this a couple times, it's just like you play at a high school and you're decent at football, and then you get to play in college and you're decent. Ish, right? You're sure. Not phenomenal, but you're decent. And you have these dreams of going to the NFL. It's like 2% on a good year that go to the NFL, yeah. Right? So much like that, there's 402, I believe is the exact number of fighters on the roster in
the
UFC.
They're north of 500 now, actually.
Are they?
Yeah. With the expansion of events.
Oh, with the expansion. So we're north of 500.
Yeah.
How many can you name, Joe? And we do a show 52 times a year.
You have to rank 15 of them times 11 weight divisions on a weekly basis.
Sure, and I've got to do research to do that, right? Yeah. And sometimes I mess up and I get called on Twitter, but that's the fun part of the research, right? And that's the fun part of the rankings. But what I'm saying is we're two guys that do this as a hobby, right? We don't make much money off of this thing. Right. It's not like it pays our bills at all. Right. We get to do fun things, hang out with each other and talk about what we want to talk about. There are guys a level above us that get paid to do this as a profession. I would be willing to bet if you got Ariel Helwani in a room with no computers, mm-hmm. no nothing around him, and you sat him down and tried to have him name all 500 fighters, there is no way. And those of you who love science, you want to look up Robin Dunbar because it's called the Dunbar number. It's a scientific principle that we can only keep track of 150 people, and then after that it's faces only. So he would be able to point out people, that's a UFC fighter, but he wouldn't be able to name them. And so if the guy at the highest level can't do 500, what is the guy below us? And I don't mean that like in a hierarchy, but the guy that doesn't do a podcast, that just goes and he's going to check it out this weekend on Fox Sports 1 when his family is done unwrapping presents.
Name 20 MMA journalists. Could you do that?
I can't, and I can tell you this from a fact because I've done it. If you go to the ranking tab and you pull down all the people's names, I don't know half of the – not only do I not know half the people on there, I don't know half the places that they work.
So that's going to – now your rankings are tied to their livelihood, right? So this is going to have to be reformed or at least
– Well, and so look, who care – like you said, who cares what I think? I'm honored to be a part of it and I take it seriously. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, am I really smart enough in the world of MMA to be – responsible for Kevin Lee's bonus structure?
For his livelihood. And you are, you know, starting with this ranking and getting paid based on the Reebok deal where you're ranked. If you rank him higher because you're buddies with him or you rank him lower because you don't like him, that's going to affect his livelihood.
Sure.
That's a big responsibility. And that's not how this ranking system was designed.
That's some Stan Lee Spider-Man sort of responsibility. Yeah.
With power comes responsibility.
Yes, with great power comes great responsibility, Joe. So we'll keep you abreast of what's going on with this lawsuit and see what happens, and we'll let you know as other fighters jump in. But this is going to get interesting, and I don't disagree, Joe. I think they're going to try and kill this before it gets to court because for no other reason than I'm pretty sure this is how they're wired. They feel that they're going to win, right?
Yeah.
But they don't want to do discovery. And I think if we had a minute to talk to Front Row Brian, and I know I shout out to him a lot, but he's doing some – if you're not listening to the Front Row Brian Show podcast, please do that because he's got some amazing guests doing some amazing stuff. And if you like MMA and you like insider information, go listen to him. But I think he would say the same thing, that this organization does not want to open the books and let everyone read their diary. That is not what they want to do.
And so these lawyers, they're not all, you know, big shot, you know, antitrust lawyers, but there are some on this team behind this class action lawsuit. They went into this, you know, they had their own pre-discovery phase and weighed, you know, are we going to be able to get money out of this or not? If we go to trial, what's the likeliness of going to trial? What's the likeliness of settling? How much will we get? Is it worth our investment? And they decided that it was. And it's not some mom and pop, you know, attorney firm out of Grand Rapids, Michigan.
No, I mean, like we said, they've beaten Apple, they've beaten Google, they've beaten Intel. So they know how to do this.
Exactly. And, you know, most likely what will happen, and this is a very, very early prediction, It'll go on for a while. More people will jump on, and then they'll settle for a large amount. So that's what will happen with this lawsuit. But I think changes will come out of this, right? So now Dana White doesn't do scrums anymore. It's speculated that he doesn't do scrums for this very reason. another MMA fighter, I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he said in 2012 they sent out a petition to all of their fighters asking them to sign, saying that they weren't, that they were okay with their contracts and that they didn't believe the UFC was acting in a monopoly type way or any violating any antitrust laws. And that was back in 2012. So I think they may have been anticipating this. Dana isn't doing the scrums because a lot of things he says are just off the cuff, which can be misconstrued, taken out of context,
and put into a
lawsuit and say, yeah, well, the president of this company said he did this to this fighter because of, you know, these illegal reasons or because of these monopoly type reasons, right?
Absolutely.
So I think it will change the way the UFC operates. I don't know how far and vast that'll happen, but there will be change, and I think whoever's named in this is going to get some money.
And then before we get to talking about UFC Fight Night 58 this weekend, I want to let you know that, unfortunately, Rory McDonald has been bumped from the welterweight division. He is now no longer a fighter. No, I'm kidding.
Heavy.
He has, however, been bumped back to the number two spot. They are going to do Robbie Hendricks 3.
That's been confirmed?
He's been bumped back.
Right,
He has confirmed he's been bumped back. So I guess I hope I'm smart enough to know that 2 + 2 = 4.
Yeah,
if he's not number one, that would lead me to believe that Hendricks is number one.
So Johnny Hendricks retweeted the story that Rory came out and said the UFC told me he's not getting the title fight. Johnny Hendricks retweeted that with a smiley face. You can read into it.
Sure.
I think it's pretty dang clear. Robbie Hendricks. Robbie Hendricks.
Robbie Hendricks. That's
Johnny Hendricks. That's Robbie Lawler 3. What do you think about that?
Like I said, I think that I really think that Hendricks should have had to win a fight to get back in that thing. And I think Rory has done enough to earn the shot.
It was all planned out, too. It was supposed to be this big event in Canada.
Yep.
And they're just pulling the rug.
Great story between Robbie Rory. And I don't know. Like I said, I enjoyed the two fights between Hendricks and Robbie.
Yeah.
But I just feel that Rory deserves it, and I'm kind of tired of the yo-yo. Because what happens if Hendricks wins?
You got to close it. And we talked about this. I'm all for rubber matches. I'm not for a fourth match. So back to what we were talking about earlier. Yeah. I say this is the closure. And, man, I would kill to see a finish, too, right?
Like, right.
Let's not go 5 more rounds. Because both their fights went to a split decision. Let's have a definitive finish and completion to this trilogy.
And then to wrap up the CM Punk story so we can end 2015 talking about him, because I'm assuming he's gonna go dark for a little bit. He says fall is probably the earliest you will see him in the octagon as he kind of gets the fight game in. Couple things on that. I'm saying this right now. He's, as you've alluded to, Joe, he's an expert in manipulating the media. So I want to say that I do not believe for one second that he's not had an MMA fight, exhibition or otherwise. Like
he said, he's only done like a couple light sparring matches. He said he's never even sparred, and he's not a brown belt. He's not even a blue belt.
I don't believe any of these things. None of these things do I believe. But you will see him supposedly in
the
fall.
No, hold on. Go on there, Eric. You think he's just kind of slow playing and putting on a poker face?
What I think is. I'm a little bit older than you, and I know that as you get older, you get wiser, and you kind of know how the world works.
So you're wiser than me because you're older than me.
Not what I'm saying.
You just said that. You're
reading into that. So what I'm saying is he's doing exactly what he needs to do to get people intrigued to watch this because he's pretending that he doesn't know anything. He's playing the part of the ringer, and I'm not saying he's going to win his first fight, but he's certainly playing the part of the – I put on a gi. I really didn't know how to tie the belt. I mean, I know the Gracies, but I've seen him a couple times at the coffee shop. I don't really. And then, I've seen an octagon. I've been in an elimination chamber. That's in a cage. So, I sort of know the sport. And so, it'll be an interesting experiment in my career to kind of totally can a million-dollar career with the WWE and just take this chance on going into an octagon and just seeing what happens at 36 years old. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at.
I can't, that's a theory, but I can't see that.
That sounds insane, dude. Insane.
And that's what he's saying. And as far as going dark, he's had a huge media blitz. I mean, he's been on ESPN, but Sports Illustrated.
Yes, but what
places where we're usually the MMA sport is usually not covered.
Which is why they hired him.
Do you think he's getting paid for these media appearances?
I don't know. What I do know, though, is that he's going to have to go dark because he has nothing else to say, right? He doesn't have a fight lined up, so you won't hear about him until there's a fight lined up because you can't keep telling the story that I...
Yeah. I don't think he can go dark. Oh, I think he's going to start working media for them.
I don't know.
It'll be a commentator.
Yeah, maybe they'll put him on... Yeah.
He'll show up at every event and he'll, you know, say a bunch of
interesting things.
What I mean
is, like, as far as this story goes, right, he's going to have to go dark on this story because there's nothing else to say unless you're going to tell me when you're fighting and who you're fighting.
Yeah, he hasn't even picked a camp, at least announced that.
Right. Oh, shucks. It's just a thing I've always... Okay. UFC Fight Night 58. It is this weekend. A couple things to pay attention to. Main event is Lyoto Machida and CB Dalloway, which has some pseudo-title implications at 185 in that I don't disagree with CB Dalloway. If he beats Lyoto Machida, I think you've got to talk about him being in the top five.
I can't just because it's CB Dalloway. I wish I could, but I can't.
If he wins...
It's CB Dalloway.
But if he wins... Also on this card, Patrick Cummings, who you may or may not remember, he was the undefeated coffee barista who got to fight Daniel Cormier for 17 seconds. He is back taking on Antonio Carlos Jr., who is undefeated, so a similar scenario to where he was about a year and a half ago. Henan Barão gets to see if he can make weight, so that'll be exciting.
Yeah.
He's taking on Mitch Gagnon, who is no joke, and if he doesn't make weight, we'll probably make him pay for that.
You think so?
Yeah.
Really?
I think
this is like a... 4 or 5 to 1 weighted for Henan right now.
Of course it is, because. Yeah. But what I see is a hungry guy that everyone's not paying attention to.
Yeah, I see a champ who got caught, missed weight, and now got a number 14 guy.
It's Barão's chance to be Dominic Cruz, right? If you're going to go out there and beat him in a minute, you have to do that to get me to pay attention again. Because right now,
my money's on Barão. For sure.
And that's fine. You can totally do that. For me, I don't care. You missed weight in a championship bout, right? Like,
yeah. No excuse.
No excuse, right? So I don't care. You go in there and beat him in a minute, let's talk about Henan Barão again. But until that happens, I don't know. And so for me, not that I'm saying Mitch is going to win this one, but I don't –
this whole card is – It's a big snooze fest.
It is a snooze fest, but I think those two fights and seeing if Patrick Cummings has anything is interesting to me. But outside of that, there's probably not a lot for you to be excited about. Eric Silva taking on Mike Rhodes. If you like Mike Rhodes, good for you. But Eric Silva is going to shellack him. Daniel Serafian, he's taking on Antonio Dos Santos. And that should be an interesting kickoff to the main card. But a lot of guys that you probably don't know, a very Brazil-heavy card, which they tend to do in Brazil.
Yep.
But like I said, main event, Machida, CB Dalloway. I am with you, Joe. That I don't believe that there's a lot that CB Dalloway has. I will also say, though, if CB Dalloway beats Lyoto Machida, I think you got to start talking about CB Dalloway.
I don't have to.
I will do the talking for you then, as I'll have to
You're
rank.
Older and wiser, as so I'll you do
to,
the talking.
I'll
about
have to
CB
rank
Dalloway.
Him on Sunday morning, which will hurt my soul a little bit. All right, we will keep you up to date on all of the results this weekend. Follow us on Twitter at Wow Show. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show, brought to you by the Triumph Training Center and Celebration Cinema. Brings you UFC 182 to the big screen. We will talk to you next week.
But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?